This is a jazz rhythm program about San Francisco minstrel Clancy Hayes.
Round the bend, I think I see a steamer, dear, heading here to this pier. And we can make it, baby, never fear, 'cause it's the old Dominion line. Say, don't she look pretty, has she a good shore?
I'm Dave Radlauer, bringing you Jazz Rhythm, an award-winning weekly celebration of the lore, culture, and history of early jazz. Clancy Hayes is a brilliant star in the firmament of traditional jazz, best known for his years singing on the recordings of Bob Scobie and Lew Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band, like this 1949 Sailing Down Chesapeake Bay. In this hour, more of Clancy with the Lew Waters Yerba Buena Band, an extremely rare World War II broadcast of a network variety show Clancy hosted from San Francisco, and a discussion with Peter Klute, who knew Clancy quite well. You'll also be hearing newly issued, and in some cases, never released, private recordings from Clancy's own personal tape library. Some from the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation's new CD, Clancy Hayes' Satchel of Song. With goodies like this, Rose of Washington Square.
Now they call her Rosie the model. She used to live up in the Bronx, but she wandered from there down to Washington Square. And those bohemian honky-tonks, well, one day she met Charlie Adams. He says, I like roses with stems. And he asked her to pose for a picture on the cover of Jim Jam Jams. And that's how she first got her start. Now her life is devoted to art. They call her Rose of Washington Square. She's withering there in basement air. She's fading pose, with or without her clothes. It seems that her Roman nose appeals to those artistic people bows. She has plenty of those with second-hand clothes and nice long hair. She's got those Broadway vampires lashed to the mast. She's got no future, but boy, what a past. She's rose of Washington Square. Oh, take it with your kazoo, man. Where's my kazoo?
Clancy Hayes performed on radio with jazz bands, playing a banjo, washboard, and singing in San Francisco in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s before his death in 1972. And you're also hearing a discussion with Pete Klute reminiscing about Clancy.
It sounds like he was a real character.
He was more of an individual than a character. Clancy was just Clancy. There's no way to describe him. Like I say, he loved his music and he loved having a good time.
He, over a period of about 25 or 30 years, was involved in traditional jazz. Let's see, he started with the early formation of Lou Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band?
Yeah, they used to go up to a place called Big Bear, which was in the Oakland Hills, and they'd go up there and just practice. And both Waters and Turk were tired of playing in bands that were just jam sessions. So they attempted to put together a band that would have more than one strain, that would have two and three and sometimes even four strains, and they would woodshed them and learn to play them up at the Big Bear Tavern. And Clancy would come up there, the sessions would start late in the night, and Clancy would come up after his radio shows, and they'd just have a jam session, but a more organized one, and usually with the same people all the time. And Clancy, of course, was there, and Turk.
Do you know how Clancy became acquainted with Turk and Lou and that bunch?
I think it was through the radio station. He was with KPO at the time. And Clancy just loved the music, and he had this affinity for music of the South. And that fit right into what Waters and Turk were trying to do.
They worked on the air together, or does this go back to the Sweets Ballroom days?
I think Sweets Ballroom, Waters had a larger band. He had an eight-piece band with the Waters band originally, but before that he had a 12 or 14-piece band, and it just got too unwieldy for him. So he decided to have a smaller group. And Clancy was one that brought some notoriety to Waters and the band. It opened up doors that normally wouldn't be open.
And then at times there was some unorthodox approach to the rhythm in the Yerba Buena band. Didn't Russ Bennett also, didn't they have two banjos going for a while?
Yeah, Russ played.
At various times.
Russ played a left-handed banjo. I don't know if you knew Russ, but
no,
he had one finger missing on one hand, so he played the banjo with his left hand instead of his right hand.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they had, well, it was strictly for a rhythm instrument. Waters' idea was that it was okay to play loud. And if you had two banjos, you played louder and put down a more steady beat.
Thank you. That's it. Lou Waters there on the trumpet, Wally Rose at the piano, Clancy Hayes, and all the members of Lou Waters' famous jazz band. This program comes to you direct from Hambone Kelly's 204 San Pablo in El Cerrito, where you can see and hear Lou Waters in person Thursday through Sunday. There's parking for 350 cars, special dinners, start at only $1.25. Say, don't forget to tune our way again next Thursday night at 11:30 on KLX and KLX-FM for Lou Waters and his world-famous Yerba Buena Jazz Band. Let's catch more of that Kansas City stomp.
And then at some point, the Yerba Buena began to come apart. People began leaving and going in different directions. And Scobie was one who decided to have his own band.
Yeah. I think it was about 1948 that Turk left the Waters band, probably just about the same time that Scobie did. And Clancy went with Scobie.
Uh-huh. And yet it seems like he remained on good terms with everyone.
Yeah, there wasn't any real reason to get mad at Clancy.
Mm-hmm.
He was always a side man, except with Scobie, he became kind of a partner, although he had nothing to do with the workings of it.
That was my next question. A partner in the sense that he was a draw, or that he was he partly musical director? Did he contribute musical materials to the Scobie band? How did that work, do you know?
Well, Scobie's band was not quite as structured as Turk's band, and a lot of things were head arrangements. Clancy would suggest what tunes he'd like to do, and Scobie would think up an arrangement, and they'd figure out who played where, and then they'd play it. With Turk, he pretty much wrote everything down.
Now this town is full of guys who think they're mighty wise just because they know things or two. You can see them every day strolling up and down Broadway, telling of the wonders they can do. You see wise guys and boosters, they'll be card sharps and crap shooters. They congregate round the metropole, wearing flashy ties and collars, but where they get their dollars, they've all got an ace down in the hole. Some of them write to the old folks for dough, and that's their ace in the hole, while others have gas on an old tenderloin, and that's their ace in the hole. They'll tell you about trips they're going to make from Frisco up to the North Pole, but they'd end up on that line in a close, not a dime, if they lost that old ace in the hole. Can flash a bankroll, and
would be mud, just like a chump dealing stud. If they lost that old ace in the hole.
Ace in the Hole, the Bob Scobie Jazz Band from 1951, Jack Buck on trombone, George Probert, soprano sax, Wally Rose piano, Dick Lammy string bass, Fred Higuera on drums from 1951, Ace in the Hole, Bob Scobie's Frisco Jazz Band, and of course featuring Clancy Hayes. Dave Redlauer with you for Jazz Rhythm and a series on Clancy Hayes.
Well, there's nothing in Chicago that that funny woman wouldn't do.
Any funny stories you can think of about Clancy?
Yeah. Most of the funny stories have to do with drinking. I can remember one that when he was at Magoon's, there was a kitchen in the back, and off the kitchen was where we kept, you know, all the supplies and refrigeration units and that sort of thing. And Clancy always had a little Mickey of Early Times. It's a bourbon. And he would keep it behind some sugar crates or whatever was back there. Some of the guys, while he was on the stage, took his bottle and filled it with Worcestershire sauce. And after the stint was over, which was only 20 or 25 minutes, he'd go in the back room and take a big gulp of his Early Times, and it just about killed him with Worcestershire sauce. But
I bet he was mad as hell, too.
Yeah, he was. He couldn't laugh probably for an hour or so till somebody brought him a good drink.
Probably one of the few times in his life he couldn't laugh at himself.
He always laughed. He just, I mean, he'd get mad at heck, but, you know, he'd calm down in 10 minutes and then everything would be all right again.
So you were a partner in the Magoon's Club in the 60s with Turk.
Yeah, right.
And Clancy played intermissions on and off over the years?
We started Magoon's at 99 Broadway, and we stayed there for about a year and a half, and we were told we had to move. And that was just about the time Clancy was leaving Chicago. So when we moved to Clay Street, Clancy just took up residency, and he stayed with us for 10, almost 11 years.
Would he sit in with the band sessions as well?
No. What he would do is we'd play a set and then announce Clancy, and Turk put up on the side of the bandstand what he called a braille rail so Clancy wouldn't fall off the bandstand. Clancy was drinking quite a bit at the time. Mm-hmm. And then he'd play for about 20 minutes by himself, and then he would announce that the band would come up and we'd join him in a tune.
Really, yeah.
who might reside, and all the world can plainly see that you're the only one for me. I told them in advance they can't break up our romance, but living up to every vow.
Clancy Hayes, an intermission recorded live at Earthquake Magoons in about 1964-65. Keeping out of mischief, the astute among you will have noticed that was not Turk Murphy's jazz band joining Clancy there, but actually it was a revival of what had been known a few years earlier as the Bay City Jazz Band. Well, Turk was on tour, but that was very much the method in those days, was for the band to come up and join Clancy on the last tune of his set before the band started again. We were talking, of course, with Pete Clute, piano player and co-author with Jim Goggin of the great San Francisco Jazz Revival, and we heard him talking about Clancy Hayes and the times at Magoons and the early Yerba Buena Jazz Band, which ran from the very late 1930s until right about 1950 or so. We heard live performances from Hambone Kelly's, where the Waters Band played in the East Bay, a little bit of Alcoholic Blues, the Kansas City Stomps from Radio KLX, those issued by the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation. And we started with Ann Hager's Blues, again, Hambone Kelly's around 1949-50, and the kind of the two banjos there, the two banjos were Clancy and Pat Patton.
By the way, there's more about Clancy, his life and music, at both the Jazz Rhythm website, jazzhot.bigstep.com, and at www.sftradjazz.org.
She would play. get on the boardwalk every day. A little soap suds on the ground, little bubbles all around. Rub-a-dub-a-dub in a little tub, all those tunes she found. A little thimbles on her fingers made a noise. She played Charleston on the laundry for the boys. She could rag a tune right through the knees. A brand new pair of BBDs. Coney Island washboard run to lay.
Recordings seem to have a kind of a good time jazz, turn of the century saloon feel to them.
He just had that knack of being able to put a tune over. And Bing Crosby once said of him that he had the best way with words and the best phrasing of anybody he ever knew. And Clancy was just a one of a kind.
And he did have a very good voice. It was a very warm baritone.
Well, as a kid, for myself, it was one that I heard on the air, and it was unique. It wasn't like anything I'd ever heard before. He wasn't a crooner, and it was just happiness, just true happiness.
He just seems like he lived to perform.
Yeah, he just loved it.
Captain, we are lost. Our ship is floundering in the sea. By wind and rain we're tossed.
Next are original compositions of Clancy. When I say original compositions, he generally was the lyricist on these and worked with various composers. The first of these is 10 to 1, it's Tennessee, a delightful lyric. And finally, Otto's New Automobile, and come to us courtesy of the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation. Clancy's personal collection of tapes, in part, has been stored with their archive. I had access to these early magnetic recordings. Now, these were done about 1946 and 47 when tape recording was very new in this country, shortly after World War II. The original medium was a quarter-inch tape, but it was a paper tape backed with an oxide, and so I've done some restoration work on these. The personnel is largely unknown. It's possible to conjecture. In many cases, Clancy is playing drums on these. In all cases, he is the vocalist on these performances from 1946 and 47.